Chapter 11. The Bysos. The Imperial record had no figure for how many Null ships had been sent into the Eye of Terror during the last 15 millennia, but the number certainly amounted to several thousand. It did, however, say how many had come back out, no more than 198. Even this was inexact. For some expeditions, such as that organised recently by the techno-mage Ipsissimus, had been mounted in the utmost secrecy, and were never registered in the archives. In all that time, the surviving probes had succeeded, but sketchily, in their chief task, that of charting star formations within the Eye, altered beyond recognition as they were since the day when the warp had exploded into real space. The incomplete charts, which had been built up, had never been made available to the houses of the Navis Nobilitae. They were accessible only to the Inquisition's innermost demon-hunting arm, totally unknown to society at large and calling itself the Ordo Malleus, and to the secret officers of the Naval Segmentae. So it was that, as he looked out over the Eye of Terror, Navigator Pelor Kaladin saw nothing he recognised. None of the star clusters, none of the stellar formations, none of the familiar mapped shapes and patterns of glowing dust and gas that he had come to know from his years of poring over and memorizing the great star charts, which were the holy writ of the Navigator houses, appeared before him. The only things that were familiar, and what shocking familiarity it was, were the human faces which flickered in and out of existence, each measuring hundreds of thousands of light-years across by the look of them. Yet he was not sure they were really human. They looked changed. He was not sure, either, whether they were not just an illusion produced by his own bewildered vision, for after a few minutes they faded. He sat, numbed, until gradually his panic swelled and overwhelmed him. He looked behind him to where Maynard Ruglow lay on the pallet, a restraint strap across his middle. The trader's eyes were glazed. He had not answered Kaladin's frantic cries, seemed not even to have heard them. Either that or the news they had brought were the last straw which had driven him over the edge into insanity, for he seemed to have withdrawn into himself. Kaladin turned pleadingly to Coiler, who occupied the second pilot's seat beside him. "What shall I do? I can't see the Astronomicon. I'm lost." The bland-faced Coiler, dressed in his voluminous striped blouse and jerkin that was almost like a robe, grinned and nudged his arm. "Yes, faith." Kaladin threw his head down and covered his face with his arms. "I can't. The Emperor has deserted me." Coiler sniggered. "Not in the Emperor, you fool. He can't help you here. Just faith." Slowly, Kaladin disengaged himself from the cocoon. He rose, retreated from the flight panel, and sat down at the table, the arched roof of the cabin curving over him in the dimness. His warp eye seemed to have lost its luster. His shoulders slumped. "I don't have faith. We're finished."
"Of course you do. You're a navigator," Coiler retorted. "How can you not have faith?"
"I worship the Emperor," Kaladin protested. "You want me to pray to demons. I can't do that."
Coiler waved a hand.
"No, no, you don't understand. Not faith in a god. Just faith. Faith that you can get where you want to go. It's the best way to navigate in the Eye. It responds to psychic forces."
Dolefully, Kaladin shook his head.
"The Emperor is the only light," he intoned, quoting Navis Nobilitae liturgy. "The Emperor is the sun above all suns."
Coiler smiled twistedly.
"You're in the Eye of Terror now. Here, let me give you some help."
He reached into his loose garments, from which he had earlier produced the plasma gun, and brought out a small, curved bottle of ribbed glass, russet in colour. Taped to it was a tiny goblet, no bigger than an acorn. Kaladin recognised it as identical to the liqueur bottle Gundrum had produced on the frontier world. The experience, then, had frightened him. It had been unexpected, an invasion of his private person, a momentary loss of control which he did not like. He shrank back as Coiler unstoppered the bottle and carefully tipped it, having first detached the acorn-sized cup. A slug of sparkling syrupy liqueur crawled from the neck of the bottle and filled the little glass to the brim. Coiler handed it to him.
and made an odd remark. "Get him inside you. He'll give you your courage back."
Reluctantly, Kaladin accepted the glass and stared into the little blob of thick liqueur with its subdued but ever-changing colours. He felt as though Coyler's words had impelled him to drink despite himself. He raised the minute goblet to his lips. The liqueur seemed to crawl onto his tongue of its own volition, and again he felt the bewildering succession of tastes, as though every flavour he had ever experienced was being played back to him. He was not even aware of swallowing, but the liqueur was sliding down his throat. As soon as it reached his stomach, the savage electric shock jolted through his every fibre. His nerves were on fire. He felt exultation, as though new life had awoken within him. The grimness of his situation had been replaced by a confident expectation of the future. It was as though gloom and darkness had been replaced by iridescent hope. While he experienced this slow, irresistible explosion, Coyler was also taking a slug, straight from the bottle. He closed his eyes, as though listening deep within himself.
"By the Emperor," he groaned,
apparently speaking to himself. "I hope we find the place soon. This is my last bottle. I've got to get more. Why was I such an idiot?" Kaladin had not known the stuff was addictive. Was Coyler regretting his action in rescuing Ruggalo from Angelica's attentions? It seemed so. This knowledge made Kaladin additionally uneasy. Wiping the neck of the bottle, Coyler was looking at him, watching the effect the liqueur had on him.
"There's only one place you can get that stuff," he said casually. "A planet Gundrum goes to. Most of his goods he gets from there. Don't listen when he tells you about having extensive contacts. He relies on his sister. So you know what to do now. Do what Angelica does. Fly by faith. Follow her trail. She leaves a strong one, I can tell you that. No, I don't mean like a warp trail. I don't even know if that will work here. Follow her. You've been doing it all along, though you probably don't know it."
He said this last with a wry smile, then reclaimed the goblet from Kaladin's limp hand and turned aside.
"Better give your friend a drop too, or he'll never regain his proper sense of himself again. This is the last either of you are getting, though, till we get a new supply."
An unexpected disappointment came over Kaladin. The electric sensation was already beginning to fade, provoking the hope that Coyler would share the remainder of the bottle and repeat the thrill. Nevertheless, he felt vibrant. He watched as Coyler lifted the trader's head and gently applied the freshly filled acorn cup to his lips. Ruggalo swallowed, then went rigid. In one sudden movement, he threw off the restraint strap and leapt from the pallet, eyes blazing.
"By the divinity, we're not finished yet." "Of course not," Coyler murmured. "By the divinities."
He turned to Kaladin. There was a new look in his eyes.
"Why do you wait? Follow Angelica. I need essence."
Kaladin hurried to his cocoon. Throwing the warp lever, he prepared to do as Coyler had bid and tried to navigate without the Astronomicon. At first, the wandering star was caught up in a fast-flowing stream as before. Normally, Kaladin would have frozen with fright. That he did not do so had something to do, perhaps, with the liqueur. Essence, Coyler had called it. He realised suddenly that there was something in what Coyler had said. Navigation in the warp was an act of faith, even with the Astronomicon. Formerly, he had always associated this with faith in the Emperor, which was every navigator's creed. But there was something more, something internal to the individual, a sort of confidence that he could succeed. Kaladin stared ahead, seeing here and there the peculiar areas of darkness, which betokened stars or clusters of stars. Not that that meant much. Line of sight was of little use in the warp. The navigator gene did more than give one warp vision. Its other gift was second-guessing, an instinct for how to get from here to there in the shortest time. It would surprise many, Kaladin reflected, to learn to what degree the traffic of the mighty Imperium depended on this instinct. The warp whirlpool smoothed out a little. They were beyond the first barrier, where the turbulence was greatest. And then the incredible happened. The whine of the warp engine died. The engagement layer clicked back by itself. The ship had dropped spontaneously out of the warp. Kaladin sat bewildered. looking out again at the vast extent of the eye with its glittering stars, most unusual in their colours, he noticed now, embedded in space which, though dark, of course, was not nearly as dark as the space of the rest of the galaxy, but glimmered with transient colour, as if a thin sheen of oil had been poured on ebony and was diffracting the light of the stars themselves. In fact, that space was not black at all. It was nearer to blue, as he had noticed before. "Something's wrong with the drive," he said in a quiet, quivering voice. A warp drive was the most thoroughly tested, most solidly designed piece of equipment in the entire Imperium. It was almost unheard of for one to fail. But if it did... "The driver's all right," Coyler told him from the nearby co-pilot seat. "You don't need it, that's all." Slowly, Kaladin turned his head to stare at Coyler, his warp eye gleaming as though with malevolence. What the little man said made no sense. "Engage the real space drive," Coyler told him, "and hold on maximum acceleration. You'll see what I mean." Kaladin spluttered. "You're mad. Your brain has turned to mush. At real space velocity, it would take us thousands of years to reach even the nearest star." Unperturbed by the insult, Coyler smiled. "Try it." Kaladin took his hands from the controls and sat back, the cocoon enwrapping him like a shroud. "I refuse to behave so foolishly." From behind him came a shuffling. Ruggalo had left the pallet and staggered up to the control board, placing his hand to lean on the back of Kaladin's chair. His eyes still had a slightly insane glaze to them, but also an excitement, as if of a new adventure. He seemed almost drunk. For a few moments, he gazed at the external screen, which showed the weird sight of the eye fitting cleanly within the screen's rococo oval frame.
"Do as he says, Pelor. He knows more about this part of the galaxy than you do."
Stubbornly, Kaladin folded his arms. For an answer, Ruggalo did what he had done on the night of their first meeting. He reached past Kaladin and engaged the real space drive. It burst into action with a coughing roar, quite unlike the smooth and ghostly whine of the warp engine. Kaladin reached to turn it off again, but Ruggalo kept his large, sturdy hand on the brass control handle, preventing him. Clenching his teeth with annoyance, Kaladin perforce took over the trim controls, not willing to see the ship fly unguided through space.
"Maximum acceleration," Coyler stressed.
He was not smiling now. The look on his face was one of grim satisfaction, as if showing them something incredible which he did not himself understand. Which indeed he was. There was no sense of acceleration in the little cabin. The ship's own inertial field was easily able to handle real space forces of that kind. The three men each kept his eyes on the velocity tabulator. It had two readings, one in miles per hour, and one, rarely referred to, in fractions of the velocity of light. It was being referred to now. The performance of the wandering star was beyond relief, far outdoing even what the ship could have achieved when brand new. The first dial whirred until it became a blur. All eyes were on the second reading.
"Captain!"
Kaladin yelled, the first time he had acknowledged Ruggalo's right to be so called.
"We have exceeded the speed of light!"
Nonplussed, Ruggalo took his hand off the engine lever. The tabulator continued to climb.
"We are doing warp speed in real space," he said with a puzzled frown.
"Not real space exactly," Coyler reminded him. "This is the Eye of Terror, where the warp and real space overlap. This particular phenomenon has appeared only recently, though, perhaps in the past year. We're in a region of the Eye where the overlap has changed its nature. Warp and space have become welded or stuck together somehow, fused rather than simply overlapping. The result is you can have a star-to-star travel with just an ordinary drive. Extraordinary, isn't it?"
He shrugged.
"The Eye is full of surprises. Don't expect this one to be the last, though. It's temporary, I imagine."
"You don't need a navigator at all," Kaladin said dully. "Anyone could do it."
"I wouldn't say that. The warp is still involved. You still need that faith. It might look like you can go from Alpha to Omega in a straight line, but you can't. Not always."
"Just the same, if the whole galaxy were like this, the Navis Nobilitae probably wouldn't exist," Kaladin reflected. More than that, the Imperium wouldn't exist either. Other races lacking the navigator gene would also be able to steer their ships over long interstellar distances. The advantage enjoyed by the human species would be gone. The tabulator continued clicking up figures. Kaladin was amazed. The wandering star was now travelling at nearly 100 times the velocity of light. It was impossible. In normal space, no ship, even with the most powerful engines, had ever managed to accelerate to more than one half the velocity of light. And even then, the friction due to dust and gas, unbelievably tenuous though the matter in the interstellar medium was, had proved so destructive as to tear such a ship apart. Yet Ruggalo's cargo carrier, a battered scow, moved smoothly, with no hint of any drag on the external hull. Coiler broke in on his pilot's delirium.
"Go easy. Remember what you're about. Follow Angelica. She's out there, leaving a psychic trail for you to follow. She even wants you to follow her."
Kaladin scarcely heard him. The wandering star went scorching through space, faster and faster. He could hear Ruggalo breathing heavily behind him. The experience of seeing stars whiz by like snowflakes in a blizzard was so exciting that he could scarcely contain himself. Coiler's voice rose to a shout.
"Slow down! You're taking us too far! We'll..."
A violent jolt flung them all forward, so that Ruggalo catapulted over Kaladin's shoulder and ended up sprawled on the control panel, bruising himself on the protruding instruments and levers. The wandering star resounded like a gong. The view on the external view screen disappeared. The screen was blank. They were in the warp. And, quite unaccountably, the real space drive had shut down and the whine of the warp engine resumed. On the control board, from which Ruggalo was extricating himself, the two levers had moved themselves. How had this happened? Had Ruggalo's collision with the panel moved them? Had the sudden jerk of the ship jolted them into a new position? Or, Kaladin hardly dared think it, had the ship itself responded, as if it were a living thing? The eye roared changes, Coiler had said, and if it could change an inanimate object like the wandering star so, what might it do to Ruggalo and himself? Coiler was still shouting, trying to rouse him.
"You've taken us over the edge, out of the region I told you about. Turn around, take us back."
But Kaladin could recognise nothing around him. Without the Astronomicon, he might as well have been in pitch darkness. Where was Galactic North, South, East and West, Zenith or Nadir? How could he turn around when he didn't know which way he was pointed? He closed both his warp eye and his real space eyes. For a moment, it was as though he had fainted. He lost consciousness of the cabin and his two companions. Deep down within himself, he heard a voice speaking to him, urging him, warning him.
"Get out, Pelor. Get out of this place. Get back to the normal universe."
His mother's voice. Except that this time he knew it was not really his mother, and not any deceiving demon either. It was his own subconscious, trying to warn him, using a voice it knew he would listen to. He opened his warp eye again. There was no jungle, no curves and skeins of multidimensional space. Nothing at all that made sense, except that a powerful onrush had seized the wandering star and was hurling it onward. How far had they come? It was impossible to know. Thousands of light years, perhaps. The warp engine was idling, having no effect in the chaos stream. Coiler was still yelling at him and thumping him on the arm. Ruggalo had retreated back to his pallet. He had to do something to get his bearings, Kaladin decided. Here, no stars were visible. Everything was one dark, roiling mass. Perhaps, if he could see stars in real space, he could guess the direction they had come from. He pushed forward the warp lever. The transition was instant, but still there were no stars. In fact, he was not sure they were back in real space until he looked at the view screen and saw the image there. Coiler saw it too. He sucked in his breath.
No. No.
What was on the screen, Kaladin could see with his warp eye too. A huge, black, boiling, circular patch of space through which vomited a flood of even darker blackness, such as he had never imagined before. This was not the blackness or darkness that came from the absence of light. It was a positive thing, like a solid substance of active force. Ravening, raving, seeking to overcome everything. There was no sound, of course, but Kaladin's navigator's imagination had manufactured one, and he heard the cosmic eruption as a rumbling, a roaring, a shattering, and cracking as though the universe itself was coming to an end. It was the vastest thing he had ever seen. The impression of huge size it gave was like nothing else. In comparison, the wandering star was no larger than an atom. Coyle stared at the phenomenon, stunned and frightened.
"By all the gods!" he exclaimed. "By the Emperor, by Zench, by Slaanesh, by Khorne, by Nurgle, we are lost. We've come 5,000 light-years. It's the Bysos!"
Kaladin scarcely even noticed Coyle's blasphemy in grouping the Divine Emperor with the strange names he had never even heard of.
"What did you say it is?"
he stuttered.
"The centre of the eye. This is where the energy of the warp pours through. More concentrated than anything you've seen. Get us out of here, if you love the Emperor. If that stuff touches us, there's no guessing what will happen."
Was this the secret of the eye? A hole punctured in the fabric of materiality for the forces of madness to pour through. Coyle was right about the effects of such violent concentration of chaos. It would twist reality beyond comprehension. But that would hardly matter, as warp energy, that furious, would spin the ship to fragments anyway. He heard his mother's voice again, sounding as if in his vitals.
"Get out of here, Pelor! Get out now!"
The Bysos, as Coyle called it, had at least given him a point of reference. He dropped back into the warp. Curiously, the Bysos was not visible here at first. The warp stream which had been carrying the wandering star, and which possibly was one of the great torrent's tributaries, had occluded it. But now, the stream was slowing and breaking up as it met similar currents to form, finally, a horrendous vortex, and the awesome moor was revealed. Kaladin knew he would not be able to simply turn the ship around and head back upstream. The warp drive would make no headway against such a powerful flow. He attempted an arabesque manoeuvre, weaving in and out of the flurries surrounding the mighty Bysos, like a moth trying to survive a raggedly blowing gale. The cabin swayed to and fro, caught in the raging forces.
"Flee! Flee! Flee!"
Eventually, he was able to put some distance between themselves and the supernatural hole in space, and then the ship seemed to get caught in one of the fast jets put up by the Bysos. A cold, malevolent wind was blowing through him, a wind of the warp, not merely as a psychic mirror to the material universe, but as a furious invading power. Kaladin did his best to hold steady as this baleful pupil of the Eye of Terror receded behind them. Where would they come out? He could only hope they would be deposited back in the same region from which they had so precipitously departed. Coyle was looking relieved but tense, licking his lips, his face pale.
"Think of Angelica," he advised. "Picture her in your mind. Feel her presence. You can do that, can't you?"
Sarcastically, he added, "I'm sure she made an impression on you." Kaladin found the instruction unnerving. Gundrum's demon-infested sister was not someone he wanted to think of at all, let alone follow her psychic trail as though it was a spectral umbilical to wherever it might lead.
"What if I just keep going?" he challenged. "We got close to the centre of the eye. If I keep going, we should reach the periphery sooner or later. Maybe we can get through to the outside."
Coyle gave vent to a sarcastic laugh.
"Stop daydreaming, my friend. You know better than that. You know you can't travel in a straight line here. You're in a warp hurricane. You'd only be chasing your own tail. As for getting through the boundary, you won't manage that either, without Angelica, unless you want to try and make it through the Cadian Gate, which is just as hard to find and patrolled by Chaos ships as well. Fancy meeting one of those? No? Then use your navigator's senses. Forget the Emperor. Find Angelica."
A groan came from the pallet.
"Angelica! Angelica!"
The name was uttered with a mixture of dread and longing. Kaladin's skin crawled. How could he take Ruglow back to that? He wondered again why Coyle had acted as he did, in defending them from such a horror, when all he wanted now, it seemed, was to get back to the source of his addiction again. He could only suppose the addiction itself had robbed him of his reason, leaving him at the mercy of his impulses. Looming far off, he saw warp traces which indicated stellar formations, and some patterns that he did not recognize, suggesting structures that certainly would have been impossible in normal space. He felt no wish to investigate. He was doing as Coyle said, flying on instinct, doing what he had always done, but without the Astronomicon, without the Emperor, homing on the signature not of a star or group of stars, but on an individual with very strange qualities. The fast jet on which they travelled dispersed itself into the substance of the eye. Kaladin reduced warp velocity. Hours passed, and then the wandering star jolted violently once again, and the tumultuous view of the warp disappeared, to be replaced by the transparent deep blue, shot with colour, that they had seen before. The warp drive faded at the same time as the real space engine coughed into life, but without any intervention from Kaladin. It was eerie to be piloting a ship which seemed to have a mind of its own. Coyle was looking about, manipulating the viewscreen.
"We have to look for the Rose Cluster," he said.
"What's that?"
"Believe me, you'll know it when you see it."
Kaladin didn't need the viewscreen. In this part of the eye, his warp vision gave him a clear view. They were travelling faster than light, but he restrained himself, not wanting to make the same mistake as before. Everything was unfamiliar. Far off, he saw what might be the physical counterparts of the strange figures he had seen in the warp. It was hard to make out what they were, unless they were simply dust veils. A planetary system loomed up. He slowed further and steered close to take a look at it. Its sun was huge, except that it was not what he would normally think of as a sun. It was not spherical, but a flat disk, in colour a brilliant shimmering green. There were at least 20 planets, each a different colour, mauve, russet, lemon yellow, magenta, but they were not arranged as planets usually were. Instead of being roughly in the same plane, their orbits crisscrossed at angles, like the electrons of an atom, and sometimes more than one planet shared the same orbit. Then, something appeared which caused Kaladin to sit stock still with shock. A figure was flying through the system, and it was bigger than the planets themselves, bigger than the disc-shaped green sun. A vaguely humanoid figure, but crimson-furred, with a furiously fanged, dog-like head, eyes glaring like pits of blood from beneath jutting brows, the head topped by great angled horns, plus a twisted unicorn horn jutting from the crown. The creature was flying by, flapping vast, membranous wings, which put a dozen planets in shadow with each pass. It wore brief but ornately worked armour down to the waist, glinting red and black, close-fitting except at the shoulders, which were protected by raised and extravagantly worked pieces. The curved, bladed battle-axe it carried in one great hand, holding the haft loosely as it flew, was bronze-black and vaster than any weapon should be. A supernatural energy seemed to flow and crackle through the unbelievable apparition, making it more solid-seeming, more real than any natural creature.
"What? What?"
Kaladin stuttered until his mind found a rational explanation.
"It's a hallucination. Can you see it, Coyle?"
Though frightened, Coyle was not quite as astonished as the navigator.
"It's real," he said quietly, his mouth dry. "A demon. One of rank, too."
Now something happened which confused Kaladin at first. The apparition seemed to be retreating. Too late, he realised that in fact it was approaching, but dwindling in size at the same time. The demon seemed angry. It flew alongside the wandering star, no more than 20 times the size of the spacecraft now, glancing at it sidelong with its smouldering eyes, wings beating majestically.
"How can it use its wings to fly in space?" Kaladin queried hysterically.
"It flies on warp currents. Be careful. Don't do anything. Perhaps it'll go away."
Kaladin shrieked and pulled on the controls as the warp entity, in a sudden rage, swung round and lashed out with the battle axe, itself larger than the starship. The wandering star jinked aside, narrowly missing being crushed by the blow, then sped off. The demon did not follow. The spaceship was too minute to be worth the bother. No more significant than a gnat. When last he looked, Kaladin saw the immense chaos creature, system-sized again, taking his frustration out on one of the circling coloured worlds, batting it sideways with the flat of the battle-axe, and sending the broken pieces hurtling into the disc-shaped sun. For the very first time, the navigator felt that now he truly understood what it was that the Divine Emperor was striving to protect the human race from. Briefly, he wondered if the smashed planet had had a human population. Multiple, multicoloured suns fled past, some misshapen, some ring-shaped, some joined together in complicated patterns by filaments of light and fire. Some surrounded by what looked like intricate decorations made of gold and silver and brass. There was no consistency. No two were identical. It was a storm in wrapped minor universe in which the normal laws of physics did not count. The will and imagination of demons counted for more.
"The Roars Cluster," Kyla kept saying. "Look for the Roars Cluster."
Kaladin found it, coming at him from the darkness and distance, and despite everything that had happened, he gasped with wonder.
"Maynard," he called. "Come and look at this."
The trader staggered from the pallet where he had been lying and peered out blearily. His arms dropped limply. His jaw sagged. The Rose Cluster was, as its name implied, a large cluster of stars. Typically, these were globular and contained thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of stars. In that respect, the cluster was unremarkable. Except that all the stars were an entrancing pink colour, and the entire cluster had the shape of a rose. It was all there. The curving petals, hundreds of light years across, picked out in sheets of stars and glowing gas, also pink. The petals foliated with one another, layered down to a softly blazing heart. Some mighty demon with a sense of beauty had crafted this. Kaladin powered the telescope, feeding its images to the viewscreen. One of the stars, forming the cluster, appeared before them. It, too, was in the shape of a rose, its radiant plasma magically suspended to form identical layers of soft petals.
"Every single sun in there is the same," Koila told him. "And that's not all. Every one of the planets in there is shaped like a rose, too. Thousands upon thousands of them."
"Is Gundren in there?"
Koila shook his head.
"No. We use this as a signpost, but they are nearby.
Can't you sense her? You ought to by now."
He pointed to a reddish-brown dot of light just to the left of the rose cluster. Evidently, it was not part of the cluster proper, for it had been missed out by whatever magic had created the floral miracle.
"That's the star. It only has one planet. That's where we usually finish up. That's where Gundrum's trading post is." "How can you be sure they're there now?"
Kyla uttered a short, explosive laugh.
"Because you brought us here, Navigator. How else do you think you found it?"
Although Kyla could just as easily have done so, Kaladin guided the wandering star towards the undistinguished sun. When it billowed into view, it was revealed as swarming and moody. An angry, muddy brown sphere shot through with flashes of red. Its sole planet was not hard to locate. It orbited close to its primary, and no sister planet showed up when he set the tabulator to search for them. A sun with only one planet was extremely rare in the rest of the galaxy, and usually resulted from some cosmic accident that had destroyed the rest of the planetary system. Remembering how he had seen a demon casually destroy a planet only a short while earlier, Kaladin could but speculate on what might have happened here. He didn't know how much it might be due to the suggestion on Koila's part, but he did indeed seem to feel an insinuating presence in his mind. Angelica. She of the barbed tail and long pincers in place of hands. She seemed to be smiling at him, laughing at him. The memory of what she had nearly done to Ruggolo came bursting into his imagination. Somehow it made him feel dirtied and depraved. He parked the ship in orbit and studied the world below. Like its sun, it had a turbulent appearance. Boiling cloud hid its surface, shot through with lightning flashes. But Kaladin's attention went to a most unusual feature. Perhaps a dozen spiky towers stuck out from the planet, protruding not only above the cloud layer, but above the atmosphere as well. They gave the planet a stellated appearance, like a seed pod equipped with spines. The spikes must each have been 1,000 miles tall. From their tips, jagged streams of energy occasionally streamed. linking the spikes together in transient patterns.
What are those?
Kaladin asked Coiler, indicating the spikes.
Just mountains.
Kaladin shook his head.
Mountains that high are physically impossible.
You are forgetting where you are.
Fascinated, Kaladin sat watching the discharges from the incredible towers. It was hardly correct to call them mountains, he thought. They were too slender, slim columns of rock 1,000 miles tall. Coiler broke into his thoughts.
Well, pilot, take us down. I'll guide you into Gundrum's camp.
Puzzled, Kaladin said,
isn't that fraught with danger? Our plan is to follow their spaceship out of the eye. We should stay hidden. I doubt they'll spot us here in orbit.
For an answer, Coiler reached into his jerkin and fetched out the liqueur bottle. He tapped its side, showing how little liqueur was left.
I've come to collect some of this, remember?
Would you endanger us all for that? Be reasonable.
The tips of Coiler's fingers sneaked back towards the opening of his jerkin. For a moment, Kaladin feared he was going to bring out his melter gun. But no, he realised, he would never be so foolish as to discharge its deadly energy in the small cabin. It would vaporise them all. Not, of course, that he could believe Coiler would turn on them like that.
You owe me, Coiler said suddenly. Where would you be without me?
Let's go down. I told you, Gundrum won't hurt you. Ruggalo was looking down on the spiny planet now. Kaladin sensed a struggle going on in him. A struggle concerning Angelica. His eyes were avid, but his face was pale with fear. Angelica. The Navigator 40 heard Ruggalo whispering the name. Though, in fact, his ears had not picked up anything at all. He was detecting, or else subconsciously guessing, Ruggalo's thoughts. Suddenly, the trader seemed to snap out of his reverie.
It's too risky. We'll stay parked up here in orbit, then follow Gundrum's ship when it takes off. If you want more liqueur, you can buy some from Gundrum back on Caligula, if he brings any with him. Provided he'll sell it to you now, that is.
Very well, Captain,
Coiler said, snarling his disappointment.
How long is Gundrum likely to stay here? Kaladin inquired.
Coiler shrugged.
Not long. A day or two, perhaps. Imperial time. Of course, we're only supposing they'll head back to Caligula. Perhaps Angelica will take it into her pretty head to explore the eye a little more.
Ruggalo remembered what Coiler had said earlier about Gundrum having mainly one source of supply. The addict was pathetically trying to influence his decision. He nodded. One got used to waiting on a spaceship.
We'll set the close-range scanners to ring an alarm when it spots an object rising from the planet. Meantime, let's get something to eat.
Ruggalo prepared a meal in the tiny gallery from desiccated vegetables and dried fruit. Coiler, as he had been doing all along, took occasional furtive sips from his ribbed bottle, not offering any to the other two. Fatigue took its toll. Ruggalo retired to the rear cabin. Kaladin threw Coiler a blanket, then lay on the pallet to get a few hours' sleep. It must have been an hour or two later that a swaying motion brought him gradually to consciousness. The cabin was in darkness, except for the emergency electro-lumen, which was never switched off, casting the palest and most subdued of blue light. He raised his head and looked to where Coiler had settled himself by the far bulkhead, but failed to see him in the near darkness. He became aware of a susurration, a low whispering noise, the sound of an atmosphere rushing past the outer hall. As noiselessly as he could, he eased himself from the pallet and saw the dim glow of instruments on the control board. Outlined against that glow was the hunched form of Coiler. He must have kicked the ship from orbit by using momentary near-silent nudges from the close manoeuvring engines. On the external view screen, thick brown cloud was boiling past the sensors. They were flying through the atmosphere, like an aircraft. Coiler was taking them down, on to the Chaos Planet.